This is the Social Link Podcast, episode 19.
E3 2014 press conferences.
On the whole momentum now, break away. Oh, let me out. Can you let me out? Can you set me free from being stuck in the world? Save me the last bit in the
another episode of the Social Link Podcast. This is Alex.
This is Anthony.
How's it going?
My mind is buzzing from E3.
While your mind is buzzing, my ears are buzzing because there's like a helicopter like flying all over like my place right now.
Oh, snap.
I know. It's hopefully they'll be gone, you know, like throughout this recording, because I really, really want to talk about what's going on this week, which people are probably surprised that they've got a new episode of the Social Link this week, right?
Right. No classic episode.
No classic episode, but also we're talking about current events.
Hell yes, 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 yes. And that current event is Electronic Entertainment Expo.
Oh, nobody calls it that. Just call it by its name.
I call it that. Well, I call it E3, but I just figured we'd do it the way it's meant to be.
Oh, be for real. We call it E3. You've never once told me that this is the Electronic Entertainment Expo.
Well, the reason I said that was prior to recording, I decided to go watch some of the old press conferences from 1995, which I can't make it through because they're so goddamn boring.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, they're pretty boring.
Well, yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, I don't even know how long E3 has been, but it's been around for such a long time and with various permutations in various cities, so that Atlanta, Los Angeles, and you know, then there were those weird rumors that it was going to go to Atlanta, but now we're back to Los Angeles. I think Los Angeles is the perfect city for E3, and I don't think it's going to leave anytime soon.
I agree, and it is this year. It is the 19th E3.
Ah, amazing.
20th. I remember when I was about 12 years old, I had a GamePro in, I think about late July,
mm-hmm.
and I was reading about the first E3,
mm-hmm.
and it was just pretty crazy. It's like, what is this? Because back then, we were used to the Consumer Electronic show being the big mm-hmm. video game showcase, and they sometimes show video game stuff, but it's not the big one.
Yeah. This, you know, like, I mean, this show is our show. This is the video game show. This is like, we don't need Oscars. We don't need anything else. This is the best way that we can show off the video game industry's best and finest. So, but that being said, I want to actually start off this podcast by talking about, you know, our drive-by segment that I actually recorded this morning. So, let's take a listen.
Hey gang, this is Alex again for yet another edition of Drive-By. Today, I wanted to actually record something about E3 2014. I'm recording this on Tuesday, and we've just seen basically like the four quote-unquote usual suspects with regards to like, you know, like doing like press conferences and stuff. That would be Microsoft, Electronic Arts, Ubisoft, and Sony. And I wanted to kind of chime in and give my overall impressions and thoughts of all of them. Now, I realized that I'm actually going to be adding this to a discussion about the actual press conferences with Anthony in this week's Social Link, but I felt like I needed to release my own kind of personal touch, if you will, with regards to what I felt about everything in general. Individually, I'm pretty sure Anthony and I are going to talk about each of them and scrutinizing the tale. But for me, I just wanted to kind of talk about my overall impressions of the whole thing. So anyways, instead of going back and forth and all that stuff, I'm just going to go right to it. Overall, I still didn't get a really good impression of what games are really coming out in 2014. Now, okay. You guys are probably thinking, what are you talking about? They said, like, you know, what games are coming out in 2014 and stuff like that. But it's not in the same scope as last year or the years before, where there's usually, like, a huge kind of cornerstone title that's actually coming out for, you know, Sony or Microsoft. If you think about it, yeah, there's Fable Legends, but how many of you out there still kind of hold trust in the franchise? I mean, after the Fable Kinect game, in addition to Fable 3, which had that very, to put it lightly, interesting campaign mode towards the end, I have personally lost interest in Fable. With regards to Sony, as much as I am a huge fan of Little Big Planet 3, I'm not sure that that's exactly what what you need to have in regards to a cornerstone title. What's also really interesting is that the way that Sony kind of presented Destiny is that it is their cornerstone title, which is why Destiny has not been present in the Microsoft press conference. You know, it's curious. It's curious admission on the Microsoft press conference just makes me kind of, I don't know, scratch my head a little bit. Now, going back to all the things that we've seen yesterday, there are many things that made us excited. I mean, the Order 1886 has turned into a glimmer of interest in my part to something that's a must-buy now. I mean, judging that, you know, and hoping that, you know, Ready at Dawn actually knows that we're expecting co-op multiplayer in this, of course, though they have not mentioned it, at least I haven't seen it in some of the press releases. And with regards to Microsoft, I mean, I was really excited, at the very least, curious about Remedy's new game, which I don't know if you all even noticed this, but it's curiously absent this year. We were told prior to E3, however, that we won't be seeing this title, but still, not even a mention. Not even a mention. I suppose this thing that we're experiencing right now is kind of curious because it seems like a lot of people have been pushing their titles to 2015. Why is that? Well, I personally feel that we're still in this transitional phase where the first year or so, we're still trying to convince people to move over to the next platforms. And to be quite honest, looking at all the games that have been pretty much announced for 2015, they all look like next-gen games. They really do. Or current-gen games, if you will. Because, of course, next-gen is now current-gen. The Witcher alone, if you look at that, looks pretty freaking amazing. I was joking around with my roommate how wonderful the mud rendering shaders were in, you know, in Witcher and stuff, and how it was, like, totally, like, the splashes, the water splashes and whatnot were ultra-realistic. But what does define this current generation, this new gen, if you will, to me? Well, I'm seeing a lot of really interesting things from both parties. Indies are now slowly becoming prominent in the industry, and that is fan-fucking-tastic. No Man's Sky was one of those games where I believe is like a media darling, and it should be yours too, because I was thinking about this the other day, and well, specifically yesterday, of course, and about what kind of interesting things might happen in No Man's Sky. For example, you leave your planet to try to get resources from another planet, only to be embroiled in a space battle, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, all these, like, ships and stuff like that start invading your planet because you help the other people on their planet and stuff. It becomes almost this weird miniature Star Trek racial kind of activity, you know? And I've never really liked Star Trek. That might come as a surprise to a lot of you, given that I like Mass Effect. But I've never been into intergalactic politics, nor real politics. But to me, the amount of freedom that this game allows, yes, you could pretty much say, like, oh, this is just Minecraft with planets and interstellar travel. But it's so much more than that. And I think that there's going to be a lot of those games that are able to take risks that we're going to see a lot more of. I just wish a lot more AAA titles would come up. To close, I wanted to kind of talk about one particular game that really, really made me excited. You can probably guess what it is. It's Rise of the Tomb Raider. It is interesting to me that they didn't go the typical route of, well, Lara Croft is now a seasoned adventurer. That, to me, tripped me out. Because I was thinking to myself, how in the world are you going to create another Tomb Raider game where you can have Lara Croft feeling alone again and isolated in her own world? I mean, you know, you can't just have her, you know, ship her to a bunch of like islands and stuff and kind of like make her like, you know, look for her shipmates and stuff like that, you know? And somehow they've went to the psychological route, which is very interesting because having a psychological Lara Croft means they're always alone. And they're always traumatized by something that happened, in which case the events of Yamatai are perfect. And, you know, there's a lot of people who basically, like, joked around and said, you know, we're her, like, Rise of the Tomb Raider, blah, blah, blah. Perfect name for a porno. But if you think about it in a sense that Rise of the Tomb Raider couldn't have been the more perfect name for this game, I think it makes sense, personally. It speaks to both how the Tomb Raider franchise has lifted itself from the ashes, like a phoenix, if you want to be poetic like that, and how Lara Croft potentially has the ability to become one of the most important characters in recent video game history. I've mentioned this plenty of times before, that Tomb Raider is one of my favorite games of the past year or so. And it's quickly becoming one of my favorite games of all time. Now, that's hyperbole. But what I'm really looking forward to is the one thing that no one seems to talk about. And if you look at the trailer at the end of the Rise of the Tomb Raider, you'll notice that there's some sort of weapon off the distance in the icy caverns of wherever she is. You know what I'm thinking? This might be the dagger of Xi'an. Yes, this is a reference to Tomb Raider 2. Now, that might be heresy, and I would still have to confirm with Square Enix with regards to this. But this has me excited. There is continuity, somehow, in the series. Even though, of course, maybe I'm just reading into it. Overall, I feel that E3 2014, despite having many things pushed back to 2015, is still truly, truly exciting. You have Assassin's Creed Unity coming out. For all you Halo fans, you have the Master Chief Collection, which is fantastic. And of course, Destiny and Far Cry 4. So if you're going to ask me who actually won E3, I could tell you it's the gamers. But if you're asking me to pick from any of the four that came out yesterday, it would probably have to be Ubisoft. Because despite having that Fitness Pal app or Just Dance, they had some of the strongest game presentations out of all four. And they were pretty consistent regardless of the cussing. So, what is your favorite E3 press conference of this year? Tell us and email us at sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com. And we're looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
So, that's kind of like how I feel about E3, like this E3 specifically. It's a mixture of excitement, but then disappointment. You know, it's like, I don't know. I actually posted an article this morning actually outlining what games are coming out in 2014 versus what games are coming out in 2015. And I'll be honest, I'm looking forward to 2015 a lot more.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I mean, you know, let me pull out the Nintendo fanboy in me and fucking say they've got the best Wii U stuff coming out next year.
Yeah, I mean, well, we're going to be talking about that later, but yeah. As you'll discover, and in case you're wondering what we're going to be doing for the rest of the show, we're going to be talking about the press conferences that, that were held yesterday. Today is Tuesday, June 10th, and as well as the Nintendo press conference that was done over Nintendo Direct online this morning. So we're going to go through in probably... I want to do this in an interesting way. I want to do it in reverse order. And the reason why I want to do this in reverse order is because the current... ones that we, you know, the newer ones, we have very fresh ideas on. And I want to work our way backwards so that we can kind of like be fair to everyone. And not to say that we're going to be a lot more critical of the ones at the end. I just want to go through them in this order so because it's just easier to remember at this point.
And we'll be able to collect our thoughts throughout the show.
Yes, of course. And then we can compare and contrast. But let me be very, very clear about this. These are our opinions. So if you want to add your opinions... you can always email us at sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com. There is no one stopping you from emailing us and letting us know of your opinions. In fact, we actually value them. If you actually send us your opinions, absolutely, we're going to read them on the air and we'll be excited. We'll be excited to read them and... maybe we'll have a conversation about it, right?
Differing opinions are welcome because Alex and I differ about 75% of the time anyway, right?
Yes, and if you can join our conversations, all the more better. So let's jump right in. Nintendo.
Oh, boy. Okay, can I be honest?
Okay.
My number one spot for press conferences is tied. And I'm maybe being biased, but I don't give a fuck. Nintendo... and Sony are number one for me equally. I love the Nintendo one. Yes, there was some. It's not the best press conferences, like Amiibo, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, some of the stuff that I kind of knew what was going to happened. Like for example, we got to talk about Zelda for a second, okay?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh God. So you and I have had multiple discussions about Zelda throughout the many years. Mm-hmm. That we've been friends, we've been recording, and one of the discussions that has always popped up is the non-linearity of the original game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you remember, A Link Between Worlds, I have told you many times before that game brought back that non-linearity in a sense. And I even told you this might be the direction Nintendo is going with the Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
And from what we saw in the video, you know, that kind of Elder Scrollish looking Hyrule,
mm-hmm.
that's the closest I can choose, is the direction that we'll be going in with this new Zelda.
Well, Aonuma did acknowledge that Skyrim was a huge inspiration for this Zelda. And, you know, more power to him. I mean, if there is any one direction that Zelda needed to go to, it would have to be in the direction of Elder Scrolls, pointing squarely at that direction. And... mm-hmm. We don't know anything yet, other than the gameplay trailer and how good it looks, but it looks like they're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, and like I said, that was hinted in A Link Between Worlds, because in A Link Between Worlds, you could get any of the items right away, like the boomerangs and stuff, instead of having to go to every dungeon and get them, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the stead of those items were peripheral items, like maybe a heart container or something like of that nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
But or like stuff like a red tunic, you know, stuff that you don't need but helps you, but doesn't, you know, necessarily go through the gameplay. In the second half of A Link Between Worlds, you can tackle the dungeons pretty much in any order.
Yes.
Because of this. So my prediction, and I had told you months ago when I first played A Link Between Worlds, do you recall this conversation? That this is the direction that Nintendo would go in the Wii U version. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be exactly like that, but it looks like A Link Between Worlds is like the first stepping stone in that non-linearity of Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
So that all fits in.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I'll be honest, when I saw this trailer, it made me really sad that I sold my Wii U.
Oh, fuck.
However, it's not worth $250.
I gotcha. Well, it's worth $250 to me, but each to their own, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So, that with that said, I think this new Zelda, which is going to be showcased next year a shit ton, you know it. I know it, right?
Sure. They have to.
They have to. Mm-hmm. My prediction for this game is it's going to be a holiday 2015 release.
Why wouldn't it be?
Yeah.
That would be foolish if it wasn't.
You know? Yeah. And to give Nintendo credit, they're pretty good at not announcing games too early.
Mm-hmm.
They always have been, so.
Yeah.
With some exceptions, like Shin Megami Tensei X Fire Emblem, which we didn't see.
That's actually a running subject throughout this E3, and we'll definitely get to that much later, or if whenever we remember to do so.
There's nothing on it?
What?
That game. Fire Emblem X Shin Megami Tensei?
There's also a lot of things missing from Microsoft. Like, remember that Remedy Entertainment game that they showed last year? Quantum Break?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Completely absent. And I'm not even going to bring up the Last Guardian because it's been absent. So I'm not even going to attempt to address that.
It's vaporware, dude.
I don't think so.
Hmm.
Sony has been adamant in saying that it is not vaporware, that it still exists.
Okay.
And they're still working on it.
Maybe TGS. Let's cross our fingers.
Oh, jeez. I don't know about that, but...
Okay. So back to Nintendo. That, you know, that game, Zelda, looks pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Amiibo for a second. Let's get that out of the way.
Okay. All
right. Okay, we got to get that out of the way real quick. I think in some cases, you know, like, if it works in Mario Kart, that'll be cool.
But the thing is, what is the extent of it? Like, I'll be honest. I am basing all of my opinions off of what they presented in the press conference. We still have about 3 days more of E3, including today, that we're still kind of catching up on a lot of information. There's gonna be a lot of information that we're gonna miss, and that's just what it is. We're gonna be a lot more knowledgeable when, you know, as the days go by. But as of right now, we are basing all of our information on the press conferences.
Okay.
Okay.
So, yeah. And like I said, I think the Mario Kart thing is cool, but here's the thing. How can they use it, and how can they use it to differentiate themselves from the two other powerhouses? Disney Infinity and Spyro Outlander games.
Mm-hmm.
How can they do that? Because let's be honest, when Outlanders came out, what was it, 2-3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
That game was a fucking surprise to even me as big of a hit. Because I thought it was just a fucking gimmick.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
And from what I understand, it actually works, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how is Nintendo going to differentiate themselves? Because what normally is the Nintendo pattern is they use an idea that may have been used outside of gaming or maybe completely new and bring it in as opposed to copying ideas. They have done it in the past.
Absolutely.
So the only thing that we know that might be different, and then again, if correct me if I'm wrong, because I really don't know a whole lot about the Skylander shit or the Disney Infinity stuff, is that there's chips in there that collect information.
It functions exactly the same as Skylanders and Disney Infinity. There is no difference in technology.
Okay.
It's just how you read in or write the information that's different. So, for example, in order for, I don't know, hypothetically, if Disney Infinity uses that base, then they need to basically tell that hardware to say, oh, well, this is how you're supposed to write on this figure, and this is how you're supposed to read on this figure. It's not as clear cut. It's like the difference between writing on something on a CD versus writing on a floppy drive. It's still two different media.
Okay.
Different encryption methods, because of course, you know, you don't want this to be hackable, et cetera, et cetera. With regards to implementation, I am with you on this. If they're going to be agnostic, meaning they're going to be independent of the game that they're going to represent in, how much information are you really storing in that? And what would be brought from one game to another? I mean, understand that, okay, Nintendo makes a million Mario games with Mario, okay? Do you like, how are you going to utilize it? Like, it's like, okay, so, I don't know, like, maybe the Mario, the mushroom that you got in Super Mario 3D World, maybe you can use in, I don't know, when you start a Mario Kart game? I mean, yeah. Maybe? I don't know. It's too many, there's too many different questions that haven't really been answered, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, one of the biggest things that confounded me, too, and this is something that you actually have to pay attention to, which I know you did. The two figurines that they used, one was just Mario, and one was Mario with a fireball, right?
Right.
So my question is, while it sounds cool, you know, for, say, Mario Kart 8, I would imagine that would be with different figurines, like maybe Bowser Jr., maybe, you know, characters that left out, right? You know, Bowser Jr., Birdie, that type of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But how if you're going to implement all of these in a game, how does Mario with a fireball differentiate from Mario with just the figure Mario? And then even going further, if you have Mario Kart 8, regular Mario, does that make sense?
Right.
Oh, okay. So how does that work? That's one thing that confounded me, was the two figures that they used as examples.
Right.
Just seemed kind of poor to me.
Poor explanation, maybe, perhaps?
Yeah. Well, you know what? If we learn more about it next week, we'll talk about it, obviously.
Sure. Absolutely. But,
so, let's move on from Amiibo to, real quick, a couple other things. I thought the Mario Game Creator was pretty neat. I mean, it's not an original idea, but I thought it was cool, and it kind of...
Mario Maker?
Yeah, the Mario Maker. Mm-hmm. I thought that was cool, and I think that brings new life to new Super Mario Brothers Wii U, and it also brings in a whole... hopefully, it could bring in a whole demographic of people that do this type of thing, who've been doing these type of things for years on the internet.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It definitely targets that market, but specifically, though, and this is the most curious, is that they, and like a lot of the things that I've read about it, say that it's only World 1-1.
Okay.
Not anything else.
Now, that would be problematic, because if you want to create, I think if you have a maker, you should have every utility of a Mario game out there. You know, you should have Lakitas, you should have flying fucking suns. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I'm going very obscure Mario Brother 3 stuff too now. You know, hidden giant keyholes, bring back a lot of that old school stuff for us to play with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now. I was watching another show, which will remain nameless, but they had a good point, though. I think this would also appeal to those that don't like Little Big Planet. And I can understand these are the people who don't like the floaty controls. I don't mind them. I know you don't mind them, right?
Sure.
But Mario controls are a little bit more precise and a little bit more boom to the point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, maybe that's the game that would do it. But if you're saying, but about this limitation, if this was only a demo and the limitation is in that demo, fine. But if it's a limitation for the whole thing, you guys, they need to expand it. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a cool idea.
It is a pretty neat idea. I mean, again, you know, it's a curious thing. And it's interesting because in terms of a development standpoint, you could pretty much very well use the Mario 1 levels as your level designer, and then basically play the polygonized version, you know, and it'll still basically function the exact same. And that's kind of, I think, a testament to how timeless that gameplay is, you know, that it works so well in both, you know, with polygons and flat 2D. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think it's cool. So let's move on to a couple other things, because I know we're kind of on a time frame and we need to move on to what next? Sony's next, right?
We have a lot more to talk about with Nintendo, though. I don't want to move on right away.
Okay. No. We do have a lot more. I got to talk about Xenoblade real quick.
Okay.
I love that trailer. And that trailer... Okay, so here's the thing. I had always been skeptical of the original Xenoblade, right?
Sure.
The trailers to that were not story heavy.
Mm-hmm.
This one seemed more story heavy than the original Xenoblade Chronicles. Mm-hmm. And it seems more in line with what I know and love from Takahashi. Because Takahashi loves his fucking mix. Mm-hmm. And Xenoblade had, I don't think it had any mix, did it?
I want to say it did. Yeah, okay, it did. But of course it did.
Okay, it did, but I don't think you got to pilot them.
Wait. No, I think you did.
Maybe.
You didn't even play the game.
I played it for an hour. You played it and you know what? I need to go. I still have my Xenoblade Chronicles. I need to go replay that. I need to go into that game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this trailer just blew me away, and it had a lot of the themes that were, you know, familiar with that game director, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the space stuff kind of just, you know, kind of gave me, like, that Xenogears deja vu. So I'm pretty excited for Xenoblade Chronicles X.
So I really have nothing to add to this, because I saw it and I completely got disinterested. What really excited me, though... And this is another reason why I wished I still had a Nintendo Wii U, just for a tiny bit, not as much as, like, Zelda, was Splatoon.
Not too
enthusiastic.
Nah, that one didn't do it for me.
It's pretty clever. The development team is basically, like, run by Miyamoto. It's a younger team. It's a newer team. And it's a 4-on-4... almost paintball kind of shooter. It uses a lot of the elements, a lot of tech, from Super Mario Sunshine, where you have the water gun and stuff like that. And it's really clever. So what it is paintball, except you don't shoot balls. You basically shoot hoses and stuff. And what you can do is let's say, for example, there's a huge building that you have to scale, or platform. What you do is you basically spray your ammo all the way up, and then what your character can do is they can actually flatten into a squid, and they can actually go all the way up on that platform. And then, you know, you can get to that platform that high. What's interesting, too, is that's how you can actually dodge other people's sprays as well. So you can also use your sprays to slow other people down. And let's say, like, they want to go from one part of the world to another, you can actually spray their path, and they'll actually, like, you know, kind of turn back into a human, and they'll be, like, super slow in the process. So it's a multi-use tool, not only to eliminate your enemies, but also to slow down progress of your opponents. And it's a really, really clever idea. But alas, it is on the Wii U, so the online infrastructure of the Wii U is probably going to prevent it from widespread adoption, and I don't think that's the audience that, you know, that's going to appreciate what the game has. But I think it's very clever, it's very creative, and again, we've been talking multiple times about how creative Nintendo is. This is probably by far the most creative game I've ever seen in Nintendo's camp this year.
Indeed. And it's a new property, right?
It's a new IP, yes. It's a brand, yeah, it's an original character.
And we'll talk more about new IPs as we get closer to the end of the Nintendo discussion, because there's a couple things I want to bring up that were in that other Nintendo video.
Okay.
The Treehouse video, did you watch that?
No, I did not. That is actually not part of the conference. So I just turned it off.
Okay. There were some interesting things. Including several new Miyamoto projects, and one particular we'll talk about later. So
I don't think we'll have time later. If you're thinking that far, we're already like 20 minutes into this discussion.
Well, we can't go into depth because there's not a whole lot about that project.
I think those are just demos.
Yeah. Well, anyway, real quick, the Kirby game looks like a lot of fun. The Yoshi game looks a lot of fun, but I will put it this way about those two games, okay? Here's the thing that Nintendo seems to do with its games, and it hasn't done with the Wii U so far. They'll have retail games, but smaller retail games. Does that make sense?
Sure.
And then they'll have their blockbuster game. And this is what they do on the 3DS, and this is what they do on the, what they should have done on the Wii U, which they haven't. They have not done that.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's happened with the Wii U is they've had blockbuster drought 4 months, blockbuster drought 4 months. You know, that kind type of pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're finally, this year, it may be too late, that we're going to finally see that true Nintendo pattern of smaller game blockbuster, smaller games blockbuster, which should be. So we have those two games centered around Smash Brothers, which is still coming out this holiday season.
Are they really? I thought there were 2015 games.
The Yoshi game comes out this year, I think.
I don't know.
I could be wrong. So there's that. Did you hear about the other announcement, too, from Itagaki?
Yes, I saw that he's bringing his game on Wii U exclusively, which is a curious idea, given that he's just kind of crazy.
He is insane, yes. I saw the game trailer. It looks like fun. It looks like Ninja Gaiden with guns. So,
wow.
Yeah, it does. But
nope,
we'll see.
Yoshi's Yarn 2015.
What about the Kirby game?
Let's see. Kirby game. Game. Wii U. Release date. Let's see. Looking again, riveting show. Looking up stuff on.
Well,
the internet.
Well, while you're looking that up, I'll talk.
2015 Kirby.
Gotcha. Okay. Now Bayonetta 2. We knew that was coming, right?
Yeah. This year.
One thing I do think that's cool about it though is that it comes with the original.
Yes.
I like that. I think that's cool. I may pick that up because I sold the original a long time ago. I needed money.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it. I liked Bayonetta.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it a lot. So I'll probably pick up that since it comes with two games, which is a theme with Nintendo lately.
Just not convinced. Like, I mean, after playing DMC Devil May Cry, it is really difficult to look at Bayonetta's direction and say that DMC doesn't exist. It is very difficult for me to do that. The DMC Devil May Cry elevated the action genre to a completely different level that unfortunately some people just, I don't know, they just don't like that.
That game kind of fizzled out, didn't it?
Yeah, any future sequels for that series, for that part of the series, is probably not going to happen.
That's too bad.
It's unfortunate.
I do, you know, Ninja Theory, to all their credit, they do tell damn good stories, and that's one I really need to get to.
Mm-hmm.
But just on a side note, I did start BioShock Infinite. Okay, cool. So end story.
Okay.
Okay. So.
I think we need to move on.
Yeah, let's move on. Anything else from Nintendo that we need to cover?
Nothing that I am interested in talking about.
I don't think I think we covered everything. To be honest,
that's
like
kind
I said,
of
I don't,
sad.
Well, let's be honest. I don't. The Mii Fighters, I don't give a fuck about. I like Smash Brothers, but
I don't care about Smash Brothers.
Yeah,
and Palutena being a character in that, it's like, all right, well, she came from a game that causes carpal tunnel. I don't give a shit.
That game's bad. New Star Fox, though. That's when we're.
That's not confirmed. That is a tech demo.
Let's hope. It's a tech demo. Damn you.
Yeah. It's not officially announced. It's a tech demo. Time Magazine revealed it. It's They showed it. It looks like a tech demo. It's not. It's half baked.
I'll go fucking cover Afghanistan or something. Time, not E3. So, I think I just offended a bunch of people. Anyway, let's talk about Sony, Alex.
Oh dear, this is my favorite out of all of them. Gameplay. Everywhere. Yes, there are CG trailers, but there's tons of gameplay all over place. All over in your mouth, in your head, in your ears, all over my body. That's the amount of gameplay that it has.
Oh, I'm going there. We never go there, but Super Cum Shot from Sony.
Oh, damn. Okay.
So, anyway, so I think Sony kicked ass, too. I agree. You know, everything, even that final trailer, which we'll talk about later.
Not everything.
Well, not everything. There were some.
So the moment that I am mentioning is the part where their new president came on, and great guy. I mean, he's probably nervous as hell, but a lot of the stuff he presented is just boring as shit. Like, you know, he didn't have, I mean, again, he's new. So I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna dig into him too much, but the section he was in is just so plain boring. It's about numbers and PSN stuff, and I'm like, oh great. He did announce some really interesting things, like, you know, YouTube by the end of the year for sharing, which is fan fucking tastic. Like I've been waiting for that since, you know, Microsoft announced it for the Xbox One, and of course, you know, like the PlayStation TV, La Vita TV, which, you know, I should have bet with Ted that I knew it was going to come here, because he told me, like, that didn't sell in Japan. There's no market for that here. And I'm like, you are insane, dude. Like, in a world where the Roku box exists and sells a shit ton, along with, like, the Amazon, whatever the fuck it's called. I forgot it's...
Amazon
Fire TV. The fact that, you know, Sony wouldn't release that here, they would be foolish. And lo and behold, they said, by the way, due to extreme popular demand, we're going to be releasing this in the United States. I made sure Ted ate his words.
I know you did.
Yeah, you saw the conversation.
Mm-hmm. I did. I know you did for a fact, and for rightfully so. Let's talk about one thing too with the Vita real quick. I heard a lot of talk. They didn't show any Vita games at the conference. Well, guess what? Nintendo didn't show any 3DS games other than Smash Brothers at their conference. Is the 3DS dead? No, nor is the Vita. Mm-hmm. That's done.
Yep. Well, they did show some games on the Vita, though, but they did a sizzle reel with a whole bunch of them. The main focus was to make sure that the PS4 is, you know, there's shit coming for the PS4. I think that they succeeded with that, but instead of actually kind of dissecting every single individual part of the press conference in the interest of time, I want to start talking about pieces of it. And I think it'll be best if you said something that interested you, and I would say something that interested me, and kind of like what we did with Nintendo.
Okay.
Okay, you ready?
Ready.
So let me go first.
Okay.
Biggest surprise. Grim Fandango HD.
Ah, I knew you would love that.
The way that they presented it is so endearing. You've never seen suits actually, like, go on stage and read letters from fans. Ever. I don't think I've ever seen that in the history of E3, where a company as big as Sony basically went up there and said, "We listen to your feedback." Making it that the system is actually made for the gamers by gamers. And the kind of exclamation point to this was when there's this fake letter that this little girl named Sally wrote, whose age seemed to change and was held by fingers that didn't look like anything like a 10-year-old. And of course, you know, it's revealed that it's Tim Schafer. And then it was revealed, to the surprise of many, that Grim Fandango is actually coming to the PS4 and the Vita. And to much my surprise, too, I was like... And then the biggest surprise, though, is that Disney is licensing that product. And it was Sony's responsibility to actually help the conversation go along.
Mm.
So, and of course, Double Fine was more than happy to just say yes. And Disney was like, you know what? That sounds like a great idea. Why don't we let them do that? And that's how that happened.
Awesome. Awesome. Oh, that's right, because Disney owns all the LucasArts stuff.
Exactly.
And Grim Fandango was a LucasArts game.
And remember, roughly about last year, or sometime last year, or maybe a couple of years ago, I don't quite remember, when LucasArts actually got purchased by Disney, Tim Schafer was famously quoted in saying, damn, I will never be able to touch my games ever again. Never.
No.
Until this happened. No. That's why I felt like this was a big deal to me. It's not a big deal to me that it's a great game. That's just like an icing in the cake. But it's great to me that Sony now is kind of showing that, yeah, they will help you, you know, get your game. If you want to make a game on our platform, we will help you make that game. Even if it means going to the rights holders and figuring out a way to make money for everybody.
Yeah, Sony kicks ass, man. They really believe in the indie developers.
In the developers. Not just indie developers. They believe everybody. Everybody who makes games and everybody who plays games.
Exactly.
Now, I am sounding like a fanboy, but the way that Sony presented their press conference is very genuine. And it's only small parts of it that don't belong. But otherwise, they've been consistent with their message.
Yeah.
So, how about you? What is the most important part of the conference for you?
You know, I it's hard, but I'm going to go with probably the biggest cliche of them all. The last trailer. Cuz you know how big of a I'm always saying, "Oh, I don't like Western games," and you know, but there's several Western franchises that are dear to me, and Uncharted is one of those franchises.
Wow.
You know this. You know that, right?
Yeah, and of course reason, I knew.
Yeah, and you know that the reason Uncharted is so dear to me is because those characters are amongst my favorites in video games. They are. You know, Sully, Elena, and fucking Nate are some of the most memorable characters in a video game I've ever played. And with the way they teased it is just fucking awesome. A lot of speculation that this may be the final Uncharted game.
Mm-hmm.
Because of those words.
Yeah.
Now,
also because of the title. The title is A Thief's End.
But, you know what, too? That might be deceiving, too. That might be deceiving as well. Here's my take on it. What I think part of the story is, I think Nathan Drake settled down with Elena after the events of the third game, and something's bringing him back. That's my guess.
Mm-hmm.
End of the fray. I think he actually settled down. Because the only thing I don't want to see in this game is more of Nate and Elena's, you know, are they not, aren't they? They've done that for three games.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just make them together in this game and take them on their little adventure.
They, in the little video package that they showed us in the movie theater and stuff, they wanted to make this Uncharted a very personal journey. And they said that they looked at the previous three games and saw the progression of the character, and they felt like that they wanted to make the player's knowledge of Nate a little bit more intimate in this one, which is why it has a more somber tone than the previous games, which are a lot of bombastic elements. I mean, they're not saying it's going to be emo all the way. It's going to have a lot of very exciting parts, still huge set pieces, because I mean, it wouldn't be Uncharted without those set pieces. But they wanted to approach it in a very different way, and I think this kind of mood piece, if you will, sets the tone for what players should expect of Uncharted 4 when it finally comes out next year.
Well, remember this. If you look back at the reveal trailers from 2 and 3, they were all kind of somber and dark in a sense. Mm-hmm. Because, remember, the second one started with that so cool, still one of the best sequences in the game, the whole him wounded in the fucking train hanging off the fucking cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's somber in its own right. And then 3 started with him walking away from the wreckage saying, this is all my fault and all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I hope that I know this game's going to be fantastic. I mean, you know, you and I were a little critical of 3, right?
Yeah, but I still like 3. It is still
I still like
really,
it too.
It's still higher than anything else anybody else has done.
Yeah, yeah, 3. I mean, 3's not as good as 2. That's 2's just one of the I mean, when I replay a game 7 times and one being like last year of a game that's 4 years old, there's something about it special.
It should be noted, though, that Neil Druckmann has come back to direct this one.
Okay, so he directed 2.
He directed 2 and The Last of Us.
Okay.
So he's coming back for Uncharted 4.
Okay. Yeah, it just, I don't know. This is going to be one of the games I get a PS4. You know, that, Final Fantasy 15, and Destiny, and Kingdom Hearts 3 are my PS4 main games. Mm-hmm. And Batman Arkham Knight, which we should talk about if we have the time.
Yeah, definitely. Batman Arkham Knight is really good, but I want to talk about The Order.
Oh, God, yes, that looks amazing, too.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this is not a co-op experience. There is no multiplayer element to it. This is a primarily single-player experience. What was interesting about this is that when I was watching the gameplay, again, it was a gameplay demo, and it really struck me as being very moody. And the first thing that popped into my mind was, holy hell, we are now at a point in video games where those pre-rendered scenes, like environments in Resident Evil 1 for the GameCube, can now be rendered in real time.
Indeed. Indeed. And I told you this sometime recently, but that scene in there is an homage, and you said it was as well, to Resident Evil.
Yeah, I mean, it's so obvious. Like, I basically, like, saw that scene, from the camera angle in itself, like, you know, to that. Like, I was like, all right, this is an homage to RE. Like, there's no question about it. And then, what was great is, like, right after that, it went into an actual scene, like, an actual shooting scene. I was like, holy crap, that's really fucking rad. You know, it just was relentless. And it was so silky smooth, like, the animations and stuff. Like, I mean, streaming over the web does not do justice as to how smooth this game is. This is running a little bit smoother than 30 frames per second. It's not 60, but it's smooth enough that you're noticing and you're like, yep, that's a pretty damn looking game, pretty fucking smooth too. And that sold me. Like that whole scene, I was like, all right, I am in this. I am in this game. Like, this is something that I will purchase next year.
See, what Sony's doing is what they've always done for me as a gamer, with the exception of the early PS3 years, okay? What they've always done is they've always made experiences that were unique from the other consoles in one way or the other, right?
Yeah.
So, like, in the PlayStation days, the reason I was a Sony guy back in those days was I found that, and I don't know if it was just my mentality, I don't want to brag myself up, but the game seemed more mature than what was going on in the other, you know, like even the Saturn, you know?
Sure.
Or even the N64. And now, it's not necessarily maturity that's the issue. That's the thing. It's that they're exploring themes that are not normally themes you explore, like the Order. What's the setting? Alex, explain the setting to the audience.
Basically, it's set in Victorian England. It's the way that if he's like the CEO or the president. The way that the director explained it was that there is a time in Victorian England where evolution happened and humans got evolved one way, and then there's another segment of the population that evolved in another. So it's almost kind of like it's interesting because it is very steampunk. With mm-hmm. kind of somewhat modern weapons, and it still has that kind of horror feel to it, which definitely has a lot of Resident Evil to it. It is a cover-based shooter, though, so it's really easy to forget that it is a cover-based shooting game. It is not a
survival horror
game. Thank
gotcha.
You. Although it might be. We really don't know, because there's such a hodgepodge of features that you could very well confuse this as one or the other. One of the things that the director was talking about too is using, you know, more than just combat to overcome a situation, even melee. So that was an interesting kind of comment that he added in that short conversation.
The Order looks really damn good. It does. When does that come out?
That comes out February 20th of 2015.
Hell yeah, son. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything else?
How about you?
Batman.
Okay.
Comic book nerd has to talk about Batman, right?
Sure.
So, it took me a longer time to realize this than Alex, but you know you think Arkham City's pretty overrated, right?
Yes.
Yes, you do, yes. It took me to realize that while I can play Arkham Asylum many times over, I have not been able to finish Arkham City for some reason. It's not that it's bad, it's not like, fuck this game, you know, nothing like that. But what it is I just can't finish it for some reason, and it just doesn't have the same feel that Arkham Asylum did. In fact, some people will probably crucify me. I was more engaged in Origins than I was City.
Okay. Whoa.
yeah, a little bit more. But here's the thing. And yeah, I'm going to get crucified for this. But Arkham Knight, holy fuck. That's Batman right there. That gameplay sequence, that's Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And to those that are complaining about the Batmobile turning into a tank, yes, Batman has a tank, folks. He's used it many a times. Just saying. So there you go. And it looks badass.
Okay.
Did you like it?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, I am a doubter of Arkham City, and I didn't even dare try Arkham Origins, because, you know, it's not Rocksteady, you know? I did finish Arkham City, though, so I mean, and, you know, you've already mentioned my concerns over it. That being said, watching this trailer, not really a CG trailer. This is a gameplay trailer. This is the actual game running. I pretty much, like, any sort of worry that I had that Arkham Knight wasn't going to be as good as the previous two games completely dissolved. I was like, okay, I am in this again. It's like, this is a day one purchase. Not even going to wait. This is going to be in my hands, and I will finish the trilogy.
I agree. I really do agree, and here's the thing. The Batmobile makes the difference. The Batmobile. If you're going to make it open, I think part of the problem, you know what part of the problem with Arkham City was? I thought it was, even with the gliding, it was kind of slow at times. And yes, I know, Batman games should be a little slow, right, Alex?
Well, my issue with Arkham City is that, because of the nature of the city, which is Arkham City, it didn't feel like you were affecting the world too much. You know, in games like, you know, Saints Row or even Watch Dogs, there's some sort of territory control that you have to do, and that usually means that these parts of the cities are probably a lot more peaceful for you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't really get a semblance of that in Batman.
No, you did not.
You know, so it was just a helpless, you know, kind of environment. So what's the use of me helping this poor fool down there if I just fly up to him, save him, and then he's going to be in danger again?
Yeah. Well, hopefully they fix that in Arkham Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's anything else from Sony?
For me, I absolutely loved the Dead Island 2 trailer.
Okay.
It is a CG trailer, but it's very done, very tongue-in-cheek kind of comedic sequence. Dead Island 2 is now set in California, and this is not going to be made by Techland.
Oh.
This is being made by the guys responsible for Spec Ops The Line.
A game that I liked.
Yeah. So, these guys are responsible for it. It is going to use the Unreal Engine. So, it's not going to be the broken-ass Techland engine that they've had before. So, no. Not happening. So, we will see a pretty much improved Dead Island all around, hopefully.
So, you think this one might be good?
This one might be good.
Okay. Because I'm not... You know what? Can I be honest? I'm kind of burnt out on zombies.
Sure.
Too. That might be not good.
But if they make it humorous, kind of like what they did with the trailer, if that's the tone that they're going to set with it, then that's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
It's almost like Dead Rising, but not too overtly ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about Dead Rising later.
Oh, jeez, yeah, definitely.
I have to talk at least about that trailer.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's that. For me, it's that new game, Abzu.
Okay.
It looks like kind of like a take on Journey, but underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And it just looks amazing. That will be one I get.
Okay.
On my PS4. That looks absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got...
No, what were you saying?
Wait. Oh, I was just going to say...
You're only allowed to say one.
I know.
And you're yelling.
Oh, my bad. Okay. I did say my one. I'm just saying we saw a bunch of indie games from Sony. That's all I was going to say.
Yeah, Broforce. I'm really looking forward to that.
Broforce
is going to be great. My thing, I want to bring up Destiny. You said you didn't really, you weren't sure of this game.
I am sure of it now.
Especially since, you can't play this game on Thursday because you don't have a PS4.
No, I cannot. You can, though.
Yeah, I'll be playing it this Thursday all the way up until this Sunday.
I will probably... You know what? If my money comes around the same time as that game, I'm going to try to get that bundle.
Oh, the white one? Oh, that was another thing they announced, right?
Yeah, that bundle. The white bundle. Mm-hmm. 500 gigs and Destiny bundled with it.
Amazing.
Awesome. Yeah, hell yeah. So... Destiny, here's the thing with that. I watched the trailer again. The story, the concept, the world looks far more interesting than Halo. Because I think the thing with Halo was that it was very militaristic. This one has like a sort of spiritual religious theme to it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Halo has that too, right? I mean, it has biblical references and whatnot, but it seemed like the environment, like the only environment that really kind of reflected that kind of ideology was, you know, Halo itself.
Yeah. I would say so. But other than that, I think the whole concept of the Traveler and humans' relationship with it, that all sounds interesting. I also like the fact that this is kind of a role-playing game in a sense.
It is a role-playing game.
It is a role-playing game.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it that you get to customize your character. Mm-hmm. I just hope you get some backstory with it. So that's what I hope. I hope Bungie... Because I feel that when you have a game with backstory, it enhances it.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I prefer Fallout 3 story over any of the Elder Scrolls. Because Bethesda actually gave you a backstory.
Mm-hmm.
Your dad is missing. You actually grew up with him in the vault,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
In Elder Scrolls, you're a prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
So what else do you got to say about it?
Well, I mean, it's one of my favorite games that I want to kind of play this year. Obviously, I am ecstatic that I get to play it this Thursday. And I'll, you know, by next week, we definitely will have something to talk about about that game.
Indeed. Yeah, next week we got a lot of current games that are out now that we'll talk about. So that's what you can expect. What's the next press conference, or are we ready to move on?
That's the same thing. I want to talk about one last thing that I felt is kind of really kind of important to bring up. No Man's Sky. This is currently the press darling at E3.
Okay.
No Man's Sky is that one game where you basically explore your own planet that is specifically generated for you, and then you can actually, and with its own ecosystem, plant life, and and all that stuff, and you can hop on a plane, jump right into the galaxy in the universe and explore it, go into another planet, get resources, participate in space battles. And the most amazing part about this, it's all procedurally generated. Not one planet is going to be the same as the other.
Fuck.
And the best part, it's made by a very, very small team. Yes, this is an independent game.
It looks amazing, too.
Mm-hmm.
When you see that trailer with the dinosaurs at the beginning and shit,
mm-hmm.
that looks just fucking awesome.
Isn't it?
And what I'm gathering is each game, your own game, is going to be different from my game completely.
The planets are different, but it's the same. But it's the same universe. We can play together. I can visit your planet. You can visit mine. If you want to trade, if you want to trade resources, that's probably what's happening there.
That game's going to be awesome.
You know what's really going to like freak you out?
What?
It's made by 4 people.
That's what I heard.
It's crazy. That's insane. Yeah.
And it doesn't look like a 4-person game. Fez looks like something created by 4 people.
Mm-hmm.
This game doesn't.
And I appreciate their excitement. I mean, when they were on stage, like, they were, like, super nervous. Like, I mean, you know, why not? They're, like, in front of, like, thousands of people. But this is the only game, to my knowledge, and I've asked many, many a person about this. This is the only game where you can fly out of the atmosphere into space, then back into another planet's atmosphere.
And then back to your own planet, if you wish.
Yes. That's insane. That is like almost you. It's almost like you are living a mini episode of Star Trek in your part of the universe.
God damn.
Yeah.
So that's one to look forward to.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of people talking about it.
Well, I don't think there's anything else to talk about. There are, but
a lot of it is actually covered by the other press conferences that we're going to be talking about. And one in particular is the next one, which is the Ubisoft press conference.
Ah, yes.
So
Far Cry 4 is one of them.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, I love Far Cry 3, and I ate, you know, Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon up. And when they announced Far Cry 4, all I can think about was, what's the setting? How am I going to be, you know, like, causing some havoc? And who is the villain? Because as you probably discovered, Anthony, the villain is now the central figure of anything Far Cry.
Indeed it is. And they did that right away with this new game.
Mm-hmm.
They did.
Pagan Min is a great bad guy.
Within 5 minutes, he was just there for 5 minutes, and you hate the son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think Ubisoft, I'm in agreement with you. Ubisoft is a very creative developer.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes Ubisoft great is they look at what's, you know, they look at what's the trends, but they don't follow the trends. They take them and twist them, and then they look at the past, and they take them and twist them.
What I also appreciate about Ubisoft is that even though they're accused of iterating on something repeatedly, like Assassin's Creed, they don't do the same thing every single year to their franchises. It's a difference between them and Call of Duty, who has a difference in storyline or a continuation, and maybe some minor differences between the weaponry and whatnot, which, you know, admittedly does change gameplay. You know, that is valid. But Ubisoft's, developers are a lot more daring than that.
Hmm.
You know?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And I'll talk about Call of Duty real briefly. The thing about Call of Duty is that I noticed the trend now with shooters is the space marine type shooter thing, right?
Yeah.
But it seems like Call of Duty's still holding onto the military shooter so tightly. Like, we'll just add some future things to make it look a little different.
To a degree. I'm not willing to write them off now that we're in a new gen. I think that Activision is pretty much aware of what they have to do in order to keep the Call of Duty franchise going. And I think they're doing a lot of the right things. But I don't want to kind of derail us from talking about Ubisoft because of it. I absolutely love the presentation for Far Cry 4, and Far Cry 4 essentially touched both the Sony and the Microsoft press conference. And
yes, it did.
That's pretty fantastic to me. And, you know, it's a game that is on my list. It is something that I have pre-ordered as soon as, like, I saw it.
I think this game is probably going to be in running consideration for Game of the Year.
Considering there's not a lot of games coming out this year, yes.
Yeah, next year, which we'll talk about in future shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously. But I think next year's just going to be one of the biggest years for games next year from what it's looking like. Mm-hmm. So,
how about you? What struck your fancy in that whole presentation?
Pick one? Fuck, there's two, but I'll pick one.
We'll go back and forth. Come on.
Okay. Pick one, Rainbow Six.
All right.
Because when it comes to my shooters, I like them to be a little slower, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. If you have them a little slower, you know, there's an intensity. I played a lot of Rainbow Six in high school,
mm-hmm.
the original, and there was something a little bit more scary about that game. Not that it's a horror game,
mm-hmm.
but scary in that sense,
yes.
as opposed to, say, a Call of Duty or a Halo or something like that,
right.
where you can take bullets, hide, and fucking, fucking hide and regenerate. Mm-hmm. And Rainbow Six, you can't do that. And the demo demonstrated that. And it had a smoothness that was lacking
mm-hmm.
from older Rainbow Six that was just fantastic. Now, I will admit that game speak that was going on, that was hokey as fuck.
It was hokey as hell. I laughed.
Yes, fucking hokey as shit.
Who talks like that in a multiplayer game?
Most people are like, fuck you, and racial, you know, stuff like that.
It's like, come over here, what are you doing over there?
You fucking idiot. This one, they're like...
yeah, Xbox like, Live right there.
Yeah, Xbox Live, we're best friends, you go shoot that enemy!
Or let's do an RP. Come on, let's do this. Like, are you okay? Yeah, I'm good. All right. It's like, it's almost like they're playing golf or something. In the whole thing. I was like, all right, well.
It sounded like an overacted military situation to me.
Yes. But they're, yeah. Oh, God. It's awful.
But if that's the gameplay itself just looked awesome.
The gameplay is pretty solid, yeah.
Yeah, it looks great. It looks awesome. Not dismissing The Division, by the way. That looks awesome, too. But I just, Rainbow Six, you know, I was worried that franchise was dead after what happened with Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
Because Patriots just... I was so pumped for Patriots.
It just disappeared, right?
Yeah, it was like in one... It was the cover of one Game Informer from December of 2011. Had a cool presence because, you know, it covered, you know, the times at that time, you know, Occupy Wall Street and all that shit that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so awesome. And then just no one knows what happened. It just got rebranded.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Or disappeared, even.
Yeah. I it probably got scrapped. This is probably a whole new game.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so it looks great. It looks great. So what about you? Anything else?
This is tough because I can only pick one out of the ones that's left. Because, I mean, if not, we're going to be talking about the entire conference.
Okay.
It would have to be Assassin's Creed Unity.
Yes. That's got me a little interested. I like the French Revolution is an interesting...
Oh my god, co-op! For the first fucking time in Assassin's Creed history, 4-player co-op.
Now, the co-op was demoed in another press conference.
It was demoed, yeah.
And it looked great. It looked really, really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
It really did. I may be a little interested in this one. I one thing that impressed me was just how... alive the city was, even more so than previous games, which mm-hmm. is impressive.
Yeah, and they actually delivered with the graphics this time. Well, you know, that might be too soon, unless they push it back. Hopefully this is any actual graphics. You know, we all know what happened with Watch Dogs. It didn't quite turn out the way that it did. But I am hoping that that Assassin's Creed Unity does look like this, you know. So, we will see. I had this really kind of interesting epiphany about this.
What's that?
There are 4 characters in this.
Mm.
Why specifically 4, and why in France? Now, this is all conjecture, and I love conjectures, as you all know, some of which actually come through true, like, of course, the PlayStation 4 being $400 or the Vita TV arriving in the United States for $100. Anyways, my conjecture for this is that there is one popular literary book that happens in France that just so happens to happen maybe a little bit before this era.
Ah.
You know what I'm talking about?
I think so, but you go ahead and tell them what it is, because I could be wrong.
It's the Three Musketeers.
Hmm. I gotcha. And there's technically four because they have a mentor.
D'Artagnan. No, yep. D'Artagnan is they took them under their wing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like thinking to myself, wait, why is this suspiciously four? I mean, obviously, you know, four players, you know, that's kind of like a good even number to have a multiplayer co-op game. But I was like, why are there four? Like, is there anything specific? I mean, obviously, okay, they name the characters, right? Like, it's not, it doesn't seem like it's the Three Musketeers or whatever. But still, it's like, it's a very, like, I'm just trying to kind of figure out, like, the thought process. It's like, wait, wouldn't it be cool? You know, it's like, if we're, like, in the French Revolution, which, again, by the way, another revolution. This is the second revolution that Assassin's Creed has been set in. The first one being American Revolution.
To be fair, though, the French Revolution was a lot more ruthless than the American Revolution.
Yeah. And they did show the single-player demo at the PlayStation conference, which is great. Microsoft had the co-op one, and it looked fantastic. Definitely looking forward to it. It is on my must-buy list this year.
It looks good. I'm trying to cut down on games, so
come on. Let's play some co-op Assassin's Creed. At least if you're not going to buy like Far Cry 4, at least get the something that we can co-op in.
Well, that's the thing. Far Cry 4 is on the maybe list. So is Assassin's Creed. There's a couple sures already. The one sure is Destiny.
Mm-hmm.
The other sure is a game that we can talk about next week, and that's Alien Isolation.
Okay,
but we'll continue on.
We will do more research. So, yes. All right. So, what is your game? What's the other game? And then we'll move on.
You know what it is. It's Valiant Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
This looks fantastic. And while we didn't see any gameplay per se, from what I understand, it's a puzzler. So it has puzzle elements, has platforming elements. Using that for a game set in World War I, it looks fantastic. The story looks like it's going to be very heartfelt. And possibly tragic, too.
It tugged on a lot of heartstrings. I was like, man, like, everybody who watched it was like, holy shit, like, what the hell? Like, everybody's, like, about to cry.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Ubisoft has a brilliant engine, and that's the Frameworks engine.
UbiArt.
Frameworks engine. Now, this engine has been creatively used with the Rayman games, which look just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And play phenomenal. And it has also been used with the recently released Child of Light, which I do need to play a little bit more of.
Mm-hmm.
But that game looks gorgeous.
Right.
So, Valiant Hearts, they're just being real creative with that engine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they made a Japanese-inspired game with Child of Light, and now they're doing something with World War I.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great because World War I is highly ignored. I mean, they said it's ignored in games. It's ignored because it's just overshadowed by World War II in general,
mm-hmm.
not just in games. So, I mean, Ubisoft is that company that will go to areas where other game companies won't go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Assassin's Creed, with, you know, Valiant Hearts, with whatever. So, that's my other Ubisoft game.
Right.
All right, so
moving on.
Indeed, that's what I was going to say. EA.
Electronic Arts. Let's do the same format. I'm going to steal this from you. Dragon Age Inquisition.
That's all I got, too.
Jesus Christ. Okay, yeah. We can probably start and stop with that.
Okay. We did see one of the biggest talk, though, ironically, was hints of a new Mass Effect. That's it.
They showed some stuff about Mass Effect. They showed some stuff about Battlefront. They're all great. They're not games that run right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're all concepts. And Mirror's Edge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the long-awaited Mirror's Edge sequel.
Reboot.
The reboot. Gotcha.
Which is kind of weird, because, like, dude, they only made one.
Let's reboot it. Yeah. I thought the first one was fun enough. It was a little rail shooty, I guess. It was too Rails-like.
Well, but it was... It just feels that way because you don't know where the options are, where the other paths are.
Yeah.
But there are multiple paths.
Yeah. It was a fun game, though. I dug Mirror's Edge. I'll check this one out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the more creative ideas in the last few years.
Anyways, we can't talk about these because they're not done.
Yeah, they're not done because we don't know shit.
Dragon Age Inquisition, however, is done.
This is probably close to a must-buy, but you have made me kind of reconsider it to a degree.
Why is that?
Because I hope which I probably am doubtful, I hope it's more like the original, which is inspired by one of my favorite games of all time, Baldur's Gate 2, as opposed to the sequel, which was inspired more by Mass Effect. And while what Mass Effect does works for Mass Effect, it didn't quite work with Dragon Age 2.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my concern.
Mm-hmm. I share the same concerns as well. I mean, I am a huge fan of BioWare games, specifically the Dragon Age titles and Mass Effect. And of course, you know, Knights of the Old Republic. What I don't like is KOTOR 2, you know, and Dragon Age 2. And seeing as Dragon Age Inquisition immediately follows Dragon Age 2, I have a little bit of a trepidation for picking up this game. Needless to say, when they showed Dragon Age Inquisition at their show, and they only showed the action parts, I was extremely worried, because they only made mention of the tactical view for a mere 5 seconds.
Ah.
They said, and we also have a tactical view for those players as well, period, moving on.
Fuck.
And they didn't even show it. That worries me.
That tactical view, I mean, is... If they can pull that off and it plays like Baldur's Gate, I'll be fucking happy.
Well, yeah, even have it play like Dragon Age 1.
Yeah, fuck. Dragon Age 1 was a really fun, extensive game that I can still revisit, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm. I just actually repurchased it on PSN for like $7.
Yeah, that's not a bad deal. Plus, did you get the
no.
Game of the Year edition?
No, it's just a regular edition. The Game of the Year edition is still $60 for some reason.
Ah. I bought one, like, back in 2011 for $17.99.
Yeah, new. But this is all digital, so...
Okay, anyhow, Dragon Age is good. I think that's the only thing. What about Madden, Alex? You excited for Madden? the newest Madden? You know, we waited long for that game.
All I heard about the golf game was that it was running on the Frostbite engine, which, you know, of course, the Battlefield games run, and... I didn't see this in the press conference. Maybe people can confirm it for me. But a ship crashed into a golf course during the press conference. I don't know if this is real.
What are you talking about? I don't even know what you're talking about.
The golf game. The PGA Tour golf.
Oh, shit.
I heard that a ship crashed on the golf course for some reason. I don't know if this is true. I don't really want to confirm because I'm not really that invested in it. But yeah, there's that. There's also Battlefield Hardline, which I'm actually getting into the beta for, but I've never been a Battlefield fan, per se. So mm-hmm. We'll see if my opinion of the series changes, since, of course, this is going to be set in downtown LA or LA in general.
So. And more evidence that the military shooter is dead, because this is cops versus robbers. So.
It's still first-person shooters. Anyways, so that's it for EA. So we're moving on to the last one, which is Microsoft.
Probably my least favorite? Second to least favorite?
Whoa, really?
Probably my second to least favorite. I would say EA's at the bottom.
Okay, well, we'll rank them like once we're done with talking about all of them.
Okay. Okay, so Microsoft... You go first on this.
Really?
No, you want me to go? I'll go first. How about that?
No, I'll go first. The best thing in this conference, in this entire conference, and you probably know where I'm going with this.
I do.
Is the reveal of Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Which is a multi-plat game that you will buy for your PlayStation.
fine. Okay, you got me there.
Okay, cool. But that reveal was awesome.
That reveal was pretty awesome, and it's funny because for the longest time, I was thinking, like, okay, Tomb Raider's done. How are they going to... How and where are they going to take Lara Croft? Because she can't very well, you know, prance around and return to her old self, because that's not the new Lara Croft. You can't turn her back into that.
That was my concern, too. With beating this new one, I was concerned about that. But there, the thing about the first one, it's a very psychological game. And what is awesome is that they're showing that the events of the first game have scarred her. It's not like, oh, I'm going to wear short shorts and go and sit in my mansion and drink tea. You know? No. And wait for someone to call that there's an ancient cup. No. This is they're carrying on the tradition. And the one thing that a lot of people don't realize about this new Tomb Raider is that while she's a very attractive looking character, she's very desexualized compared to her predecessor.
Mm-hmm.
She is a very human character as being a sex symbol. Because from what I understand, the previous reboot before this one, they tried to humanize her, but they kept the sexualized elements, and it just did not work.
Right.
So, I mean, they nailed a franchise that I have always despised. That is one of my favorites now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm with you on this.
Oh, God. 2015 can't get here any sooner.
Oh, I got something else to tell you real quick. There was an announcement from Square Enix earlier. This is not Tomb Raider related, but a game that you've been wanting is coming to our shores, Alex. Have you heard?
Oh, yeah. I've heard of this.
Final Fantasy Type-0.
Yeah, for some reason, HD and on Xbox One and PlayStation 4. I'm still trying to get used to that.
I'll take it. I'll fucking take it, because I heard this may be the first M-rated Final Fantasy as well, too.
We can't talk about that because we're still talking about Microsoft.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that next show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Tomb Raider, Rise of Tomb Raider for you, right?
Mm-hmm. Your turn.
Ori and the Blind Forest.
See, I started seeing this listing, but I didn't freaking figure out what the hell else is. Like, I think I missed that during the press conference. It was pretty early in the morning.
Yeah. Ori and the Blind Forest was a 2D game. In the style of Rayman and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's this little creature falls from the sky. It looks like a 2D platformer game of some sorts. This little creature falls from the sky, and this like little heavyset, weird-looking creature finds it, and it looks like it raises it and takes care of it. And there's these very bittersweet sequences of them bonding together.
Mm-hmm.
It also had a very kind of like Shadow of the Colossus, Last Guardian type feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, it gets darker, and it shows this big raven creature after the little creature. And then at the end of the trailer, the big creature that raised the creature tries to wake it up, and he finds it dead. And that's how it ends. Very bittersweet.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very bittersweet. I would recommend you go checking out that trailer, even though, of course, we won't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, we'll get it on PlayStation 4.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully. It looks beautiful. Those are the type of games with heart. That's my main thing. Even, you know, if a game has a lot of heart, it may not, even if it has some semblance of a story, but a lot of heart, that's what matters the most to me. So,
mm-hmm.
That looks like heart to me.
Yeah.
So, that's for me. What else is for you?
Oh. Do we need to pick another one?
Pick one more.
Ooh, I find myself having a really tough time finding something that I'm really interested in that conference. Mainly because some of it has soured me. I don't want to get into the negative because I feel that we can kind of, you know, summarize all of it, like, you know, after this. And for all the press conferences. I am hopeful of Fable Legend.
Mm.
I am curious about it and how the four player is going to work. But more importantly, above and beyond that, there's a lot of video games that are expressing themselves in interesting ways, multiplayer. For example, the game that I'm not going to say that Fable Legends copied is Evolve, which is from the guys who made Left 4 Dead, who basically made a 4-versus-1 game where one player is the alien or monster, and the four players are trying to hunt them down Predator style. Well, actually, the one player is hunting everybody down Predator style, and then the other four players are just, you know, the ignorant fools that, you know, are just going to get picked off in the distance.
I gotcha.
That, to me, is very interesting. It is multiplat. I'm looking forward to that game in a way. I'm not exactly entirely excited about it.
Not like a day one or something like that. So.
No.
Okay. For me, it's not. Okay, so this is interesting. I just got to say, I have the same feelings about the press conference with you, okay?
Okay.
I will say this, though. That Dead Rising trailer cracked me the fuck up. Just how fucking stupid and silly it was.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And what was great, one thing that I can appreciate, too, is that Capcom was willing to poke fun at itself.
Yeah.
Which I loved. Which is ironic. It's a week after Street Fighter IV Ultra Arcade Edition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I love the fact that they did Super Dead Rising Alpha X, whatever the fuck it was called.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. And the trailer was just hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I was just laughing, so I was entertained by the trailer. Will I buy an Xbox 360 for it? No.
I thought it was clever. So, I mean, I thought it was pretty well done. It's in good taste. It was good.
You're not going to buy an Xbox One after this press conference, I take?
No. Not at all. So, that being said, do you have anything else to add about the Xbox One?
I don't know. I just, you know, I'll tell you what I told you recently. You know, I'm not a big Rare fan, and for sure not a big Conker fan, but I have a lot of friends, both online and real life, that love the original Conker's Bad Fur Day. And I'm just going to be honest, I know people have been asking, but it was a little insulting on how they brought him back.
I absolutely agree. And while we're on that subject matter, let's talk about the stuff that didn't really sit well with us with regards to like the press conferences. I felt that Conker is a great character that is underutilized, and this is not the best way to utilize him.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing about Conker. I think when he was released, when that game was released, it was ahead of its time. But I think in today's landscape, he would fit perfectly. Because there's certain things, like people always whine about having a Shenmue 3 and things like that. And I think those are just with the times, right? That's kind of nostalgia.
Sure.
But I think with Conker, even though I'll admit, I'm not a fan of Conker. Okay? Like, I'm not a fan of Shenmue. But I would take Conker over Shenmue just for the fact that he is more appealing to the day and age we live in. And he fits in what is suitable for mainstream gaming. I mean, in a day and age where South Park Stick of Truth is a best-selling game, he would fit in. Would you not agree?
No, I agree.
Okay. And that's the thing. They just like, oh, let's make him a thing you could use in Project Spark and make your own Conker game. So shut the fuck up. That's what I got from that.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw Project Spark, I saw that the people who built it had no idea on how to make an iconic character that you would immediately identify with the game. Like Little Big Planet, you saw Sackboy, and once you see Sackboy, you always think Little Big Planet. That's how these things work. But when I saw the characters in that trailer, I was just weirded out. I was like, what in the world are these characters? And they look all weird. And, you know, it is what it is. But I almost felt like they could have been a little bit more creative with picking a mascot for that game, you know? And that being said, I want to move on to others. EA had a decent showing this year. They had a lot of good proof of concepts. But whether or not any of these will bear fruition, we'll have to see next year. Because, I mean, Star Wars Battlefront won't be out till maybe spring 2015. Criterion is working on a game that is essentially a racing game, but for everything. Ghost, who is the assigned Need for Speed developer, is not present. The Mass Effect guys, they're working on Mass Effect, but of course there's nothing to show. And of course, BioWare Edmonton, who, you know, which is Casey Hudson's team, they're working on something that they just talked about. They didn't even show it.
Yep.
So it's hard to get excited about something if you can't even see anything about it.
I would love to, because I think Casey Hudson's a great developer. I mean, you know, yeah. Other than... Yeah, and even I was very, you know, I wasn't insulted by the ending of Mass Effect 3 like so many people were 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought it was a solid ending, but with that... Well, not a solid ending. There were issues with it, but it wasn't as bad as people said it was. But I think if he's doing a new IP, that's got me excited, because that guy likes to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
And flesh out his character. So that's awesome. But I agree. There was not really anything from EA.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's an, you know, just, though we're working on Mass Effect. Just,
oh, Sims 4.
Okay.
I know Ari is excited about it. Oh my god.
Yeah.
That guy has a problem.
Yeah. Well, he likes the Sims. That's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, well.
Well, we can...
Ubisoft is interesting because they just started cussing all over the place. I was like, what in the world is going on with this press conference? Everybody's just, like, the first 5 minutes there was, like, cussing, and I'm like, well, maybe it's because they're French?
I don't know. It's like listening to me, because you don't cuss as much as you used to, and I cuss like a shitstorm.
You cuss like a sailor.
Yeah. They should hire me to do those press conferences. I'd be good.
I just didn't get it. And, you know, and what is up with that fitness thing?
Okay, Ubisoft had the fitness thing, and then I told you this yesterday,
mm-hmm,
when we were watching these. Ubisoft, every single press conference, what's cool is they do have cool things to show. They always do, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's always one moment. Where it's so, or one or two moments in those press conferences where it's so awkward.
Mm-hmm.
Like when Aisha Tyler was talking to the guy that developed the fitness game and was making, you could tell he was getting very uncomfortable with her.
Mm-hmm.
Or the dance number.
Yeah.
You know, reminded me of Miyamoto on the Wii as a Wiimote as a flute, if you recall. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. There you go. Just awkward moments from Ubisoft.
Right. And then Sony, on the other hand, they had that one section where they had the new guy just kind of come up and talk numbers. And then they had Brian Michael Bendis pop up and talk about, guess what? Not a game. Hey, Sony, remember what Microsoft did last year that everybody hated? You're doing it!
Let's be honest. I think Brian Michael Bendis is a great comic book writer. I've read a lot of his work. But I have seen the guy been interviewed. I have seen the guy at panels. I have seen the guy on stage. He does not do well with public speaking. He's a good writer. Have a spokesperson for him or something.
No shit.
Yeah, he's not the best speaker. He is a great writer, though. He still writes solid stuff. You know, even though I'm not the biggest Marvel fan, I prefer DC. But he is a good writer. He's just not a good speaker. So mm-hmm.
Another thing that I had a point of contention with Sony is that they seem to not know what the hell to do with PlayStation Now. They did mention it, but they openly acknowledged that they're going to work with publishers to try to figure out how the pricing is going to be. Now, Okay, so this is very very interesting because they're the only ones that are offering this. So the onus is on them to get this right, you know?
Okay.
But the thing is, it's interesting, and it's kind of like a saving grace for them, is the people who are betaing it, they've actually asked the people to give them feedback about it. And that's, to me, that's awesome that they have, that they're willing to basically accept a lashing from people before the service actually launches. So that's great. And with regards to everything else, I mean, it really dropped off. Like, that press conference really dropped off on the lower third when they started talking about the numbers. And it's kind of sad because, like, when they start talking about the numbers, they added some really cool things, like the Vita TV coming out in the United States and, you know, even inserting Mortal Kombat in there. But it just seemed a little bit out of place with regards to, like, how the tone is in that conversation. Also, you know, not to make fun of our new, you know, of the new guy at Sony, but he was kind of making hand gestures very similar to the President of the United States.
Ah, I gotcha.
Yeah, I was looking at his hand gestures, and I'm like, you know, and I'm like, all right, you're doing the closed hand, and a move forward, then open to hammer your point. And even Kotaku made fun of them. I had laughed my ass off. I'm like, oh my god, I'm not the only one who actually fucking noticed.
at least it wasn't Red Tracer and real battles from Japan.
I don't think that's going to happen anymore.
That won't happen again. But I will say this, the one part that kind of, I just think was kind of forced, was the Ratchet and Clank segment too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good kind of segue back into games. But again, Sony, I know what you're trying to do is you're trying to cater to as many gamers, people as possible. Don't try this ever again. Just cater to gamers. We're not interested in entertainment shit at all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's the thing. What has killed Microsoft press conferences the last few years? And to Microsoft's credit, even though we were critical of it, what did Microsoft not do?
Yeah.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah.
Let's get on to Nintendo.
So Nintendo's is interesting because it is a lot of fluff. I feel that, okay, the intro was great, you know, them fighting and stuff, but they still did not show me why it's worth keeping a Wii U for. It is really, I mean, if you think about the slate this year of games, that is Smash Brothers, that Captain Toad game, and Bayonetta, if you're going to buy it, and Hyrule Warriors, there's not much to buy on the Wii U still.
I agree with you to a point. I think it's going to be worth it having it next year. I think it's going to be worth having any system next year.
But
right?
Imagine if you played, if you've kept the system since the launch. How many games do you have in your library now?
I'll be honest. I've had it close to launch. So I have about 5 games. But
yeah.
Yeah, I'm being honest with you. I'm being honest. They've had a drought. I honestly, my hope is that with this holiday season, it's going to emulate 2011's holiday system with the 3DS. Where, and again, I'm not justifying what they did. This should have happened at the very latest last year, okay? This past holiday season. Can I say that?
Sure.
It should have happened earlier. But here's the deal. Better's later than never. And I think it's going to happen. I think we're going to get out of this drought. I think it's going to go in. I kind of disagree with you, but you do have valid points, so we'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
But I have an issue. Can I rant about something about their press conference?
Well, yeah, that's what we're doing.
Okay. Fucking Miis. I'm sick of Miis. Can I say that?
Mm-hmm.
I am so sick of Nintendo having... When I play Mario Kart, I don't want to play Mii Kart. I want to play Mario Kart. It's just a pet peeve of mine when I'm playing Mario Kart. When I see people online playing as their Miis, I'm like, fuck you, use Mario. It's Mario Kart. You know, that's just... Make Mii games if you want. Those still sell. Those are still okay. Just don't keep them away from my Mario.
And now in Smash Brothers.
I know. That's what I was going to get at. Fucking Smash Brothers. And my concern is that there's going to be balance issues with those Miis, because it looks like what they did was, let's just take Mario, Link, and Mega Man, or Samus if you want, and just make them prototypes for the fucking Miis. Fuck that. I want to play as fucking Mega Man or Samus. I don't want to play as a Mii pretending to be them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the Paulina announcement, I'll take that over fucking Miis any day. Miis are just annoying. That's one thing that... That's one thing that I have an issue with Nintendo are fucking Miis. I'm sick of racing. I'm sick of fighting them. End of story. Wow. And yeah, I have a Mii, but they should function a different purpose than the way Nintendo is making them be. They should Miiverse. That's fine. Use them for Miiverse, but keep them away from Mario Kart and Smash Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm done ranting about trivial things. So.
Trivial things. Wow. When you get lately, when you get really, really riled up, you stop pronouncing things properly.
I know. But I get so pissed about certain things. God. And that's just a big pet peeve of mine with Nintendo.
So, okay.
Yeah, so, I don't know. You usually hear me defend Nintendo from you, but not this time.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go.
So, now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's start ranking all of them. So, how would you rank all of these press conferences?
Okay. Can I go bottom?
Yeah, do it.
Okay, the bottom one is EA, followed by Microsoft. And then I have four place because here's the thing, I'm going to cheat on this, and I'm fucking cheating on this. Number two is Ubisoft, with Nintendo and Sony for me, because just based on my taste in games, just number one, because they all have the stuff that I want to
play. Okay.
I will be honest. You go.
Okay. So the bottom of my list will definitely have to be EA. Okay. They didn't have a lot of games to show, and you know it's promise, but promise doesn't put people on the table along with you to have dinner and all that stuff. You would probably be surprised, maybe not, but the next one would have to be Nintendo.
I am not surprised.
I am critical of them, but you know the thing is, it has a lot to offer to its fans, but I feel like they're doing a disservice to their fans by not offering nearly enough. The next one would be Microsoft.
Okay.
And the main reason why is because although they've kind of made missteps over the past year or so, they still have a lot of offerings. They are definitely trying to make new IPs with Sunset Overdrive. They're also trying to, you know, bring back the Fable brand, and you know they're making a lot of calculated risks. And also, like, you know, they're definitely trying. They're doing a lot of like first, you know, exclusive first content on their platform for a lot of games. And Phil Spencer is just starting, so I mean, there's a lot of things that need to be set in motion, but it's still not there yet. My next one would actually have to be Sony. And the reason why Sony is second is while their press conference is so genuine and so much for the gamer, they've made several missteps towards the end that just kind of soured the whole message of gamers first. Specifically, when they start talking about entertainment content and whatnot. And yes, I understand that these are all targeted towards gamers, but these are not games. And they just fell out of place because you went from games, numbers, entertainment, then back to games. Like, what is this? It's like it's some surprise cream filling inside, like, you know, some sandwich. I mean, it's not, you know, I'm not expecting that. I want a hot dog. I don't need like a freaking Oreo in there, too.
Yeah, you know what? I think Sony had issues with that 2 years ago with the Wonder Book part. Remember that?
Yeah. That's exactly the same thing. And of course, Ubisoft takes it because they did have a misstep. They had one misstep, which is the fitness thing. And of course, the cussing. But otherwise, they had a very solid lineup. Just Dance would not be around if it wasn't popular. And if it wasn't something that a lot of people can get behind with. Fortunately, it is something that everybody gets behind with. And not just that. They could have, you know, they weren't happy with just taking advantage of the mainstream. No. They need to make everybody happy. From the hardcore gamers to fans of Assassin's Creed, Far Cry, Tom Clancy games. They had everything covered. Everything. Mm. So, in terms of like a press conference, I felt like I got a lot more out of Ubisoft. And even some heart as well. Like, you know, with Valiant Hearts and even like that trailer for The Division. Wow! Like, that really made me think. Like, you know, when I watched that trailer, I was like, holy shit! Like, I never thought about that. And what a way to set the stage for that game. I mean, absolutely awesome. And, you know, and I am glad that unlike most of their competition, meaning all the other people who had a press conference, they actually have, at the very least, two solid games to offer this year.
Mm-hmm.
For me. So, that's why Ubisoft wins in my book.
I gotcha. Fair enough. Okay, so that's our E3 show, which... Mm-hmm. I'm glad we did one this year, because we missed out last year.
Yes, we did.
And you were actually at E3, too.
Yeah, I was doing other podcasts. Holy crap. We were doing like podcasts all the way up until like when the show was actually over and people were like kicking us out. That's crazy.
So let's talk about next week. We're going to probably do our last E3 show next week, right?
Yeah, so basically next week we're going to be talking about all the things that we learned about E3. So we made a concerted effort not to go to E3, mainly because we wanted to kind of, again, experience it from this end of the table. I could have very well actually been there. A lot of my friends have offered me tickets, but I felt that it's really important to kind of view it from the fans' point of view. So we're all in the same conversation together and there's not like this thing. But we can guarantee you though that even though we're this on this side of the table, that we'll be knowledgeable about anything that's coming out this E3. So if you do have any questions about E3, email us at sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com and we'll happily answer your questions.
Yeah, I'm really excited because, you know, I want to talk more about this Final Fantasy Type-0 announcement. I want to talk more about Alien Isolation. You know, all kinds of stuff to talk about, huh?
And they even have an update for Final Fantasy 14.
Oh, really? We'll talk about that. And we'll probably even talk about our normal, what is it? What you've been playing.
Of course. So until next week, hope you guys have a happy E3 and checking out everything, and we'll see you guys later.